Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC with me, Manuela Zaragoza. Coming up, nonsense work and pointless jobs.
Ask anybody who works for a large corporation, they'll immediately say, oh my God, there's so many people here, they're just doing nothing.
We speak to the man who says many of us believe our jobs are completely meaningless. Still, that didn't stop a job advertisement in India attracting 23 million applicants.
We desperately want one of these jobs. We have to get one. It would change our lives.
That's all here in Business Daily from the BBC. Does your job matter? I ask because the most recent Gallup survey on the state of the American workplace found that only 1/3 of US employees are engaged in their work and workplace. Most, the survey found, feel rather indifferent about their job. Things aren't much better here in the UK, where a recent YouGov poll found that 37% of the population believe their job makes no meaningful contribution to the world. In a moment, we hear from the anthropologist who delved deeper into those figures. But first, employee disengagement is something Frédéric Denard says he knows all about. He used to work at a company called Interparfum, which is a manufacturer and distributor of prestige perfumes. He took the company to court, claiming compensation for what the French press called bore out, stress induced by having little or nothing to do at work. Late last month, the French Employment Tribunal ruled partially in Mr. Denard's favour. So I asked him, what was his daily routine there like?
Alors j'arrivais à peu près vers 10h30 le matin.
I would usually get to work at around 10:30 in the morning. Sometimes I wouldn't actually go to work. But usually I wouldn't work more than 20 to 40 minutes per day. Then the rest of the time I was just holding up, really, and trying to avoid my co-workers, because it was their gaze that made me feel ashamed, that made me feel extremely uncomfortable, knowing that I was being paid to do basically nothing. It all started when Interparfum lost the Burberry license, because my job had been to help others. But suddenly all these people were fearing for their jobs, and no one was actually giving me tasks anymore because they feared to lose their jobs. Every Monday when I went to see my boss, he'd actually tell me to come back next Monday. That's a whole week. Can you imagine? 1 week having to endure the gaze of my co-workers.
It's interesting that you say you were ashamed. Why do you think you felt this shame?
Complètement, c'est une torture psychologique.
I was living a moral and psychological torture. The court actually mentioned this was a form of harassment because I was given promises that were never met. They kept offering me jobs and training I could never access. The term bore out will never be acknowledged. A lot of cases are happening, but we will never be acknowledged. They'll never put a name on this kind of issue in France.
Avoir un nom, tout simplement.
And how long did this go on for? I mean, how long did you spend time at work without having anything to do?
En fait, la placardisation a duré 4 ans, en sachant qu'avant...
It lasted 4 years. I was with this company for 8 years, and the first 4 years were heaven. It was a great company to work with. And then it became hell. Suddenly, after the Burberry license issue, no one wanted to give me work anymore. People kept giving me promises, but they would never hold them up.
Qui n'ont jamais été suivis des faits.
Well, Mr. Denard says his health deteriorated as a result of his work problems. He had an epileptic fit while driving and ended up in hospital. He was signed off work for 6 months, but was sacked by Inter Parfums. The tribunal didn't say his epilepsy was a result of his moral harassment at work, but ruled his health had been affected and that his dismissal was invalid. But if things had been so hard at work, I asked him why hadn't he just quit?
Je n'ai pas quitté l'entreprise tout simplement parce qu'on...
I didn't quit immediately because my employers made me work a little bit, but it wasn't enough. Most importantly, they kept telling me to come back next week. They kept making all these promises that I thought would eventually turn out. After the accident, my employer realized this was serious, and they offered me training and progression in the company. But it was too late.
Réel, et c'est dommage.
And are you working now?
Alors non, je ne peux pas travailler.
No, I'm not working, and I can't because of my medical condition. I've applied to be considered as a disabled worker.
De travailleur handicapé.
What message would you like employers to take away from your case and what happened to you?
Les entreprises ne peuvent rien.
I believe companies can't gain anything from these affairs. It's impossible. But they have corporate and money issues. Their purpose is to make money, not consider people like me. But I do hope my testimony will help others like me, people who are in denial. So if I can do this and help people, then I believe my life will have a meaning.
En tout cas, ma vie aura eu un sens.
Frédéric Denard and the tribunal awarded him around 50,000 euros in compensation. Inter Parfums refute all his allegations and say they will appeal the ruling. Well, our next guest has delved deep into the subject of meaningless jobs or having too little to do at work. In fact, he's written a whole book about it. And I'd love to give you its title, but I can't because, well, have a listen.
My name is David Graeber. I work as an anthropologist at London School of Economics, and I've just written a book.
Which you cannot name.
Yes, it is a book that we cannot name.
Because it's too rude.
Apparently,
broadcasting rules in America means we can't actually reveal the name of your book. But let's just say it talks about pointless jobs.
Yes, jobs where the person doing the job secretly believes that the job either shouldn't exist or is actually socially harmful.
And you're saying in your book that there are lots of these jobs around.
I was really surprised myself because when I first wrote an essay on the topic, which I wrote in a very obscure publication.
This was several years ago, this essay.
Yes, 2013. It just totally exploded. It went crazy. Within weeks, it had been translated into something like 13 different languages. So I realized, oh my God, this must be much more common than I thought. And then eventually people did a survey and they discovered that of people who do have jobs in this country, a full 37% said they were quite sure their job made no significant contribution to the world at all.
Give me an example of the kind of jobs they were talking about.
Probably the single most common category I got were telemarketers. Pretty much all telemarketers think that they're doing harm to the world and wish they didn't have to do it. But a lot of middle management, a lot of people, these sort of minor executive, managerial, supervisory, clerical, administrative sort of jobs, which are exactly the kind of jobs that have been exploding over the last 30, 40 years or so.
Explain to me why they think their jobs are pointless.
Well, some of them just literally do nothing. A lot of people are just given a responsibility which you could do in an hour a week or 2 hours a week. Some of them, on the other hand, are working very hard but believe that if nobody was doing this, either it would make no difference or the world would be a better place. You know, for example, a lot of people in corporate law feel that way. I had one guy who was a subcontractor to a subcontractor to a subcontractor to the German military, whose basic job was if a
a military officer wanted to move his computer from room to room, they had to call people who would call people who would call, and then he'd have to drive 200 kilometers in his car, authorize something, move the computer, and then go away again. This is entirely due to privatization.
Due to privatization.
Yeah. I mean, you know, think about it. This is the German military. I mean, the German army has been accused of many things over the years, but inefficiency is rarely one of them. Yet somehow to create greater efficiency, they have to create this endless chains of privatized people. We're just pushing papers around.
It goes completely against the grain of what capitalism is about, which is about everyone becoming more efficient. And what you're saying is that it just doesn't seem to be happening in the labor market.
It's fascinating. I mean, you could almost call it the Sovietization of the capitalist system. You know, it used to be under the Brezhnev period, they had like thousands and thousands of people working at nothing because they had a full employment policy. You know, and that was supposed to be exactly what capitalism is not supposed to do. I mean, last thing a competitive firm would do would be hire people it doesn't need. Yet ask anybody who works for a large corporation, they'll immediately say, oh my God, there's so many people here, they're just doing nothing. And the only explanation I can find is that it has to do with empire building. Within a corporation, a lot of your prestige has to do with how many people you have working under you. I had one guy wrote to me and he said, well, I work for banks as an efficiency expert. I've worked for various banks for the last 15 years and I realize that I have a pointless job because no suggestion I've ever made has ever been adopted. He claimed that about 80% of all bank jobs could be eliminated easily. He said, you know, this moment I make some suggestions, somebody realizes they're going to lose underlings and therefore prestige, and they block it every time.
Which begs the question, does it matter if people are working pointless jobs?
Well, it matters to them. One of the things that's really interesting that came up in my research is the degree to which actually people are really miserable. You know, we're taught to think that everybody wants something for nothing, that people are essentially trying to get the most they can out of the world for the least amount of effort. But if you give them a job where they can just collect a pretty good salary for doing nothing, they feel terrible. It has all these depression, anxiety. It has all these psychosomatic effects. People get talk about all these strange illnesses that just disappear the moment they get a real job that has responsibilities. And also people treat each other really badly. A lot of people who had experience of both types of jobs, jobs which actually do have a social purpose and jobs which don't, actually drew attention to that. They said, you know, when you're all working on a team and something you all think needs to be done, people treat each other well. But the moment everybody secretly knows the task is pointless, everybody starts screaming at each other, everybody starts mistreating, get all this bullying and abuse. So it really does have effects.
Given what you found, would it be your position that AI and the automation of lots of these jobs is a good thing because that will remove a lot of these pointless jobs from the workplace?
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of these jobs could easily be replaced. Actually, you could just get rid of them entirely. But the ones who are doing something that's required maybe once a week, sure, you could replace them with a shell script fairly easily, most of them. And most of them know that. In fact, some of them said, I actually figured out an algorithm that would do my job. Don't tell my boss.
But at the end of the day, people need food on the table.
Well, yes.
So what is the solution?
Well, I've become increasingly attracted to the idea of universal basic income. I think we should divorce recompense with work because we have this idea that if people had the means to live, they would just sit around and watch TV all day. Well, I don't think that's true at all. I mean, if people were happy to being paid to do nothing, they'd be happy in these pointless jobs. In fact, the other thing people say is, well, if you just pay everybody and say, it's up to you how you want to contribute to society, people will all go off and do something dumb, or a lot of them will. You know, streets will fill with annoying street musicians and crank theories and bad poets and things like that. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some of that. But on the other hand, if something like 40% of people are already doing nonsense, you know, how can it be a worse distribution of labor than we already have? And at least they'll be happier doing it.
David Grieber there, anthropologist at the London School of Economics. And as to the title of his book, let's just say that it refers to an uncastrated male bovine animal. I'll leave the rest to your imagination. Now, you may be listening in a part of the world where anyone with a job, any job, is considered lucky. You might be wondering, what on earth are all those pampered first world workers complaining about? Take India. The World Bank estimates that more than 12 million people between the ages of 15 and 29 are expected to enter the Indian labour force every year for the next two decades. That's a lot of jobs that the economy there needs to create. But is it generating enough to go round? Raoul Tandon reports.
I've come to Harrah Station, and as I'm sure you can hear, A train is just leaving. There are thousands of people here who are waiting to start their journeys. The railways are very popular here in India, and not just for moving around, because the Indian Railways have advertised for 90,000 new employees. Guess how many people have applied? 23 million. Amongst them, Arania and her family.
We desperately want one of these jobs. It would change our lives. It would give us respectability in society.
Hello and welcome to Matrix Communications.
I've left the railway station and have come to the office of a successful marketing company in Kolkata. Ramji Ray runs this firm and he says it's not easy for youngsters to get jobs here in India.
I think there's a huge issue with this and there's no growth in the economy and jobs are not getting created. And unless the government focuses on the rural sector, there is no hope really for India.
When you advertise jobs, do you see more and more people applying for them?
If I have one vacancy, I would at least about 700 to 800 applicants within 2 days to 3 days. I mean, even for a job which does not require a higher degree, I'm getting people who are overqualified.
Across India over the last few months, there have been lots of protests like this one. Here they're shouting, shame on you, Arun Jaitley, India's finance minister. Lots of businessmen are annoyed that the government's new taxation system has slowed down the economy and seen a loss of jobs. They say they're fed up of India's jobless growth. What does the government say? Here's the civil aviation minister, Jayant Sinha.
There is, in fact, a tremendous amount, an upsurge in job creation that is happening. But it is not happening in the traditional economy. It's happening in the new economy. It's happening in entrepreneurship. It's happening in new kinds of jobs. It's not about the missing jobs. It's about the missing data on jobs.
There's lots of talk about jobs in chai or tea shops like this across India. The government says it's created millions of jobs since it came to power. Talk to businessmen and women, though, and they'll give you a very different picture. But one thing that both agree on is that India needs to change its education system and make it more vocational. With me is economist Saswati Chowdhury.
Being graduate is nothing. Now, being graduate, you're an auto rickshaw driver. You are doing some odd jobs out here and there without any sort of employment security or anything.
It's that bad now.
It's that bad now. Even engineering graduates, because most of them are unemployable. They do not have that skills that are required. We need to shift from the present education system that we have, and especially engineers. Because somehow the engineering education in this country has suffered because of the mushrooming of just private engineering colleges. I mean, people just thought that we will just go into a college, get a degree and we'll be getting a job. But things are not so rosy now.
Outside this tea shop is one of Kolkata's most famous colleges. Lots of students about. Let's go and talk to them about jobs.
It's very hard to find a job here. There's lots of competition out here, that's why. And we don't get that much opportunity.
I think almost in every household you'll find one or two creatures who are still, you know, staying at home unemployed.
Well, the concern is they won't get a job if they stay back in India. So I think the concern here is we need to move out fast to get a job.
The world's largest democracy will go to the polls early next year. There are lots of issues that will decide the government's future, but it looks like job creation is moving to the top of the list.
Raoul Tandon reporting there. Send us your thoughts. You can get in touch via Twitter. The handle is at ManuelaBBC or at BBC Business. And Ed Butler is back again with Business Daily at the same time tomorrow. Stay tuned to the BBC World Service.
I knew right at that moment that my whole life was gone. I'm going to jail for a very, very long time. There was no doubt about it.
Lives Less Ordinary is the podcast with astonishing personal stories from across the globe.
And honestly, even at that point of reporting to a journalist, I don't think I really knew that that was in itself an act of whistleblowing.
Expect the unexpected.
The only future is death here. So if we live, we might have a chance. We will die anyway, but we will die trying.
Lives Less Ordinary from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.